Penguin Random House Audio presents American Serial Killers, The Epidemic Years, 1950 to 2000, by Peter Vronsky. Read for you by Renee Ruiz. For my beautiful wife, Anna Zanotto, for all the years of her love and coffee. Preface. An arrest in Milwaukee. Cops can go for days, weeks, and sometimes even years working routine shifts in which nothing extraordinary happens. They work a grind of calls to domestic disputes, medical distress, unruly customers, parking complaints, and petty burglaries. A few go their entire career never once chasing a fleeing suspect, kicking in a door, or unholstering their weapon. But all that can change in an instant. On the evening of July 22, 1991, Milwaukee police officers Robert Routh and Rolf Mueller were coming to the end of one of those routine shifts. They were assigned to District 3 in the Avenues West, a neighborhood that had seen better days. The Pabst Beer family mansion stood there, as did the campus of Marquette University and the Milwaukee High School of the Arts. But some parts of the neighborhood were rough and troubled, especially around the blocks at North 25th Street, where the elegant old Victorian houses had been converted to rooming houses or torn down to make way for anonymous two- and three-story apartment buildings. The area was predominantly populated by poor minorities, especially African Americans and recently arrived Southeast Asians. It was 11:30 p.m., and it had been a quiet evening. Routh and Mueller were hoping that nothing would come up in the next 30 minutes to delay them from ending their shift at midnight and going home. But just as they turned onto 25th Street from Kilbourne Avenue, the headlights of their patrol car came upon a shirtless black man running toward them. He had a pair of handcuffs dangling from his left wrist, and his face was contorted in panic and fear. Routh and Mueller had no idea what they had just driven into as they exited their vehicle to calm the hysterical man down. 32-year-old Tracy Edwards told the officers some freak had handcuffed him and begged them to get the handcuffs off his wrist. Routh tried using his handcuff key, but it did not fit the brand of cuffs around Edwards' wrists. Had they been able to remove the handcuffs in the street, perhaps that would have been the end of it, and we would not have heard anything more of this story, at least not that July. Edwards told them that he had been forcibly restrained for several hours in the Oxford Apartments just up the street. The officers accompanied Edwards to a shabby three-story apartment building at 924 North 25th Street. Their plan was to get the key, remove the handcuffs, and hopefully clear the matter up quickly, without having to arrest anyone, transport them, and do a whole bunch of paperwork till God knows when. Edwards led Routh and Mueller to the door of apartment 213. The first thing they noted was that it had its own electronic alarm system and high-grade armored locks, unusual for a low-income apartment building in that neighborhood. Knocking on the door, they noticed a second thing, a distinct odor of death and decay wafting from the other side, a smell most cops are familiar with and never forget once they have experienced it. The door was opened by a tall, slightly disheveled white male in his early 30s. He identified himself as Jeffrey Dahmer and showed them his employee identification card from the Ambrosia Chocolate Factory, where he said he worked as a mixer. He was calm and polite and invited the officers and Edwards to step into his apartment. Upon entering the small, one-bedroom apartment, Routh and Mueller almost gagged on the thick smell of human decay mixed with the perfumed scent of room deodorant and disinfectant. At first glance, the apartment appeared to be completely normal. It was relatively well-furnished with a couch and armchair, carpeting, floor and table lamps, cared-for plants, and a large lit aquarium on a black table, its electric filter quietly humming and gurgling as fish lazily circled behind its glass. Thick blue curtains hung on the windows. The white walls were decorated with framed abstract posters and gay erotica, which by the 1990s wouldn't even raise a cop's eyebrow. Immediately to the left of the front door was the kitchen area with a sink, counter, stove, and fridge. A small upright floor freezer stood next to a kitchen table cluttered with tools and beer cans. The apartment was moderately littered, like after a small party, with empty beer cans, tissue boxes, and spray cans of air freshener. There were several small plastic chemical containers and a stack of bright red boxes of Soilax, a floor and wall cleaner sold in hardware stores. The only really unusual thing about the apartment, other than the smell, was a big surveillance camera mounted high in a corner of the room. Dahmer readily admitted that he had handcuffed Edwards, but offered no explanation or showed any anxiety. His attitude was, "I do this all the time, so what?" Edwards got a sense that the two police officers did not appear particularly alert or interested in his complaint. Now Edwards added that Dahmer had threatened him with a knife and had told him he was going to eat his heart. Routh and Mueller rolled their eyes. They thought they knew where this was going. This was a gay drama thing, a domestic quarrel that got out of hand, and now wild accusations were flying. They radioed in a check on Dahmer, and the response came back that he was on probation for a felony sexual assault on a minor. Now, Routh and Mueller became alert. Mueller demanded the handcuff key, and Dahmer told him that it was on the bedside table. When Mueller headed toward the bedroom, Dahmer suddenly became agitated and attempted to push ahead of him. Routh held Dahmer back. Mueller entered Dahmer's bedroom alone and stood there in the dim light. The first thing that caught his eye was a huge, blue, plastic chemical drum in the corner of the bedroom. There were a TV and a VCR on a dresser facing the bed, a two-drawer black metal filing cabinet. His attention was drawn to what looked like crusty bloodstains on the bedsheets and faded smears of blood on the wall around the bed, as if someone had been sponging the walls but couldn't quite get the stains out. The bedroom, like the living room, was decorated with erotic posters, and the window was draped in the same dark blue curtains. As Mueller approached the bedside table to look for the handcuff key, his eye was drawn to a stack of Polaroid photos in a partly open drawer. It took Mueller a few seconds to process what he was seeing. Severed heads and penises, dismembered bodies. In one photo, he saw a severed head spray-painted gold, cupped in two severed hands, perched on a pile of ice in a kitchen sink, next to it a bottle of Dawn dish detergent and a sponge. There was a series of photos of unconscious or dead black men with their wrists handcuffed behind them. A photo of a corpse in a bathtub, gutted and skinned to the ribcage. Another series of photos featured a corpse bent over backward like an arching bridge on the mattress. Mueller immediately recognized in many of the Polaroids the decor of the apartment he was standing in, but he couldn't quite believe it. When Dahmer saw Mueller come out of the bedroom, his face ashen and the Polaroids in his hands, he began struggling and had to be wrestled to the floor by the two officers and handcuffed. By now, Mueller knew he would not be ending his shift on time that evening. As Routh held Dahmer to the floor, Mueller, almost in a daze, began trying to find the source of the awful smell. He walked into the kitchen past a pile of pans with a dark brown sticky material pooled in them. Mueller instinctively reached for the fridge door and opened it. As the light blinked on, Mueller gazed past a plastic squeeze bottle of honey and containers of mustard and relish, down into the face of a black man looking back at him from inside a cardboard box on the bottom shelf. Next to it stood an open container of Arm & Hammer baking soda to absorb the stench. Inside the freezer compartment, Mueller came upon plastic bags with some kind of meat and a decaying head without a face.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?